Earlier today, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas met with President Bush at the White House to discuss the stalled Israeli-Palestinian peace process. At a news conference afterwards, President Bush praised progress toward democracy in the Palestinian territories and pledged $50 million in housing aid for Palestinians in Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon was also in Washington this week to address AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Action Committee. With an Israeli pullout from Gaza now scheduled for mid-August, there's hope that Palestinian-Israeli relations could take a turn for the better and fear that the time to negotiate progress may be running out. There's considerable international pressure, especially from the United States, to get back on the roadmap. But both sides face internal difficulties. On the Israeli side, many Jewish settlers in Gaza vow to resist the pullout plan. On the Palestinian side, President Abbas's Fatah party faces strong challenges in upcoming parliamentary elections from the militant Islamic group Hamas. The window of opportunity to advance the peace process may still be open, but history suggests that such windows can quickly slam shut. With both Sharon and Abbas in Washington this week, the question is, what role should the U.S. play in moving things forward? Later in the program, the looting of the Iraq Museum and the resurrection of the lost legacy of ancient Mesopotamia in text. But first, the Middle East. If you have questions about the U.S. role, what Washington can do to facilitate a peaceful pullout and a peaceful democratic Palestinian state, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from Jerusalem is NPR's Linda Gradstein. Always nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
You recently visited one of the settlements in Gaza, one of the Jewish settlements. What's the mood ahead of the pending Israeli pullout?
Well, I was actually there today, and I went to three different settlements. The feeling is mixed. In the several of the very large settlements where most of the settlers are Orthodox Jews, they remain convinced that the pullout is not going to happen. They are making absolutely no plans for it. It's supposed to be in less than 3 months. I spoke with a farmer today, a woman actually originally from Brooklyn who's been a farmer in Gaza for 29 years, growing celery and stuff, and she is planting and buying seeds and, you know, continuing with her life, and she really, really believes that it's not going to happen. Others who I spoke to say they are going to do everything they can to stop it from happening. The government, you know, has been talking about this, but there are no concrete plans yet. But one of the things they stressed over and over that, you know, if what they consider to be this terrible, you know, catastrophe, that's what they call it, if it happens, they say the only that they must all be moved together as a group, close to 10,000 people, somewhere between, you know, close to 9,000, 10,000. There have been and people are still moving in. Mm-hmm. Today, 8 families moved in. So, and they say that if the government goes ahead with the Gaza withdrawal plan, there will be tens, if not hundreds of thousands of Israelis from all over the country who will flock to Gaza and do whatever they can to physically stop it from happening.
Well, there was one report that interpreted that statement of, well, if this does go ahead, could we all please be moved together, that at least that sort of envisioned that this was going to happen and it's a crack in the resistance.
It may be a crack in the resistance, but, you know, today when I spoke to them and said, what about this report, they said, first of all, you know, that it is not a recognition that they're going to leave. And they said they still really believe that it's not going to happen and that they are going to, you know, fight up until the last minute. At the same time, you know, there are some who are, you know, somewhat more you could say pragmatic and say that, you know, well, we believe that Sharon is going to do this, and now we just have to try to figure out, you know, how to get the best, you know, deal out of this or what we can do to make this, you know, not as painful. But it's hard to see how this is going to happen on time, at least, which is slated to begin in the middle of August and last for 3 to 4 weeks. There's nothing set up. As of now, there's no place for these people to go. So it's still, the situation is still, there's a lot of confusion. Nobody really knows what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move to the other side of the equation for a moment, Linda. After his meeting with President Abbas earlier today, President Bush announced, we mentioned, $50 million in development aid directly to the Palestinian Authority. This would be to for housing projects and infrastructure in Gaza after the Israeli withdrawal. Is that important?
Well, it is important. The meeting itself is important. It's the first meeting in 5 years between an American president and, the head of and a Palestinian leader. So that in itself is important. The $50 million in aid for the Palestinians is very important. They were actually hoping for more, and they hope that this is just the beginning. President Bush also announced that he's sending Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice to the region before the Gaza pullout. And perhaps most important, the Palestinians say, was President Bush's statement that any changes from the 1949 armistice line must be mutually agreed on between Israel and the Palestinians. Now, Israeli analysts said this seems to contradict a promise that President Bush gave Prime Minister Ariel Sharon a few months ago, in which President Bush said that there have been changes on the ground and that these changes have to be taken into account, which Israel has interpreted to mean that Israel can annex certain large settlement blocks which were beyond the 1967 borders. So there's some concern in Israel about what President Bush's remarks meant, and the Palestinians have said that they are pretty satisfied with the meeting with President Bush.
And was it significant, earlier we've been hearing Mahmoud Abbas saying, we want this money sent directly to the Palestinian Authority, not funneled through NGOs, non-governmental organizations. This money would go directly to the PA.
Right, and that's a vote of confidence, is how the Palestinians are seeing it in the PA. Until now, the American government has funneled it through various nonprofit organizations because they were afraid that if it was given to the Palestinian Authority, it would either disappear or be misused. And the fact that it's being sent directly to the PA really shows, American confidence in the PA, and it also will strengthen Mahmoud Abbas in his challenge against Hamas. So that, for the Palestinians, was something that's very important, because they say it shows that they have successfully, reformed some of the financial practices, that there's a lot more transparency of where the money is going. There's less waste. So they feel that they've been working very hard on financial reforms. And President Bush's announcement today is a affirmation that they've been doing, a good job on this.
Linda Gradstein, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
NPR's Linda Gradstein joining us from her home in Jerusalem. Well, as we mentioned earlier, talk again today of a window of opportunity for peace in the Middle East. To define this window, it's important to understand what's at stake for Israel, the Palestinians, and for the U.S. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Dennis Ross, author of The Missing Peace, The Inside Story of the Fight for Middle East Peace, and the counselor for the a counselor at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Always good to have you on the program, Dennis.
Nice to be with you.
And from his home in Silver Spring, Maryland, we're joined by Shibley Telhami, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, professor for peace and development at the University of Maryland. Nice to have you back on the program.
Always good to be with you.
Dennis Ross, you published an op-ed in the Washington Post just before the meeting at the White House between Presidents Abbas and Bush, urging the White House to act before this window of opportunity closes. Do you think the administration took the right steps today?
Well, I certainly think that they have signaled that they intend to do more. There's no question that the readiness to provide money directly is an important signal for the reasons that Linda said, but also because the administration had not reacted to what the Congress was doing. The Congress basically took the request the administration had made and in a sense said, well, we're going to put it all to NGOs, mm-hmm. non-governmental organizations, and not directly to the Palestinian Authority, and they really didn't get much of a reaction from the administration. I know because I was up in the Hill talking to people, and they were saying to me, do you think the administration really cares? And I said, well, I'm not really the right person to be talking to about that. But in fact, if the administration does, it needs to signal it. And I think today it did. So it's a signal not only to the Palestinians, but it's also a signal to the Congress that, in fact, there is a desire to have $50 million go directly to the Palestinian Authority. So that, I think, is an important step. The other steps that I see in terms of tone are also useful. Now, steps and tone, it's language. It's not necessarily action.
It's symbolism.
It's symbolism. And Linda picked up on the point of the anything that relates to the borders has to be mutually agreed.
Mm-hmm.
That's not new. In the Bush letter to Sharon of April 14th, 2004, while it acknowledges these significant population centers as the new realities, it also says any borders have to be mutually agreed. So what the president has done now for the first time is repeat that language, but he puts the emphasis on any changes have to be mutually agreed. The language has been there. It's not new. But this is the first time he's had a senior Palestinian giving him a forum in which to say it. So that's why the symbolism, I think, is also very important for the Palestinians. And last point would be...
Well, let me just... We're not running out of time in the break. I did want to turn to Shibley Talhami before we get to the break. I did want to get your thoughts. $50 million direct to the Palestinian Authority, but I don't mean to denigrate $50 million, but it's a modest gesture.
No question it's a modest gesture, and it is more symbolic in the sense that it is a vote of confidence, and certainly the Palestinians took the congressional action as a vote of non-confidence because they essentially were being treated like the Arafat administration that had been criticized, and the president had acknowledged that they had done a lot of things, including more transparency of their financial institutions. But I think that what Dennis said about Congress is really interesting, because I think you've got to look into the extent to which the administration deals with this issue as a priority issue. The administration initially made a bold proposal for a relatively significant amount of aid to the Palestinians right after the Palestinian elections. Congress acted on it in the way it saw fit. Now, the administration did not put any kind of effort into changing Congress's mind. And the reason for it, in my judgment, is that this issue, while it is important in some ways, and clearly today it showed it was, it's not the top priority for the administration. They're not willing to use political leverage to move the positions, and that, I think, is an issue that has to be thought about.
We're talking with Shibley Talhami and Dennis Ross about the U.S. role in the Middle East. When we come back from a short break, we'll hear from officials in both the Palestinian and Israeli governments about what they think Washington should do. We also want to hear from you. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas met with President Bush today to urge more American support for the Middle East peace process. At a moment when both Palestinian and Israeli leaders are taking controversial and contested steps towards peace, we're stepping back to ask what's the proper role for the United States in this. Of course, you're invited to join us. Within the bounds of diplomatic reality, what do you think America can do to encourage peace between Israel and the Palestinians at this point? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guests are Dennis Ross, author of The Missing Piece, The Inside Story of the Fight for the Middle East, and Shibley Talhami, who's the Anwar Sadat Professor for Peace and Development at the University of Maryland. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Or email us, totn@npr.org, and let's get a listener on the call. Susan, you're with us from Clinton, New York.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My concerns focus precisely on the issues of giving even more money to the Palestinians. First of all, I'd like to know what the U.S. has done to account for all the money that was previously given to the Palestinian Authority under Arafat, and then obviously has gone down a rabbit hole since we don't hear about the use of this money in any constructive fashion. And I'd like to know more specifically on the U.S. side, what will the U.S. do to monitor and to safeguard the appropriate use of this money? This money that has previously been given to Palestinians has only helped to foster corruption, nepotism, and cronyism. And I believe at the time that Arafat was dying in Paris, there were many reports about all the squabbling going on among the PA and his wife about how to split up the money. I think a lot of that money is probably sitting in bank accounts in Switzerland.
Oh, Dennis Ross,
is this problem?
Dennis Ross, is Susan right to be skeptical about the uses of this money?
Well, I think she's right to want to know how things have changed, but let's be clear. There's a kind of confusion here again. All the money that we gave in the 1990s to the year 2000 was done not to the Palestinian Authority. We gave a very small amount at the very beginning to help pay the price of the recurring cost of the new Palestinian Authority. And that was in an international fund, but that was a very small amount. Almost all of our aid, 99.5% of our assistance, was given to NGOs because we didn't trust that the money would be used by the Palestinian Authority in a way that was anything that could be defensible. The rest of the international community didn't use the same standards we did, so it's a different story. Now, what's changed? Salam Fayyad, who is the finance minister of the Palestinian Authority, has instituted transparency and accountability according to World Bank and IMF standards. After all, he came from the IMF. There are other people in the Palestinian Authority, people like Hassan Abdulibde, who holds two ministerial portfolios, who are also very much focused on creating transparent mechanisms. So in a sense, this is a vote of confidence in Abu Mazen, who is trying to change the Palestinian Authority. I would guess that this money will go for very specific purposes that can be easily traced. And I think it's right to raise questions because the overall administration still needs to go through an overhaul. And that's what Abu Mazen has to carry out, and it's a slow process.
Abu Mazen, of course, the pseudonym of Mahmoud Abbas. Susan, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you. Can I just ask, how, as a follow-up, how can I, as a citizen and other people concerned about this issue, actually access documents to, in a sense, have a paper trail, at least from the part of the U.S. government, about the uses of this money under the PA?
I think the best thing to do is to write to the Congress, because in fact they're the ones in the end who appropriate it, and there will have to be an accountability. The administration accounts for where the money goes, what the projects will be, how the Palestinian Authority has used it. That's, when AID is the recipient, it has to come back and report to the Congress. So the best way to follow it yourself is to go to the appropriations committees and see what kinds of briefings they're getting.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Susan.
Thank you.
Shibli Telhami, let me ask you. This was a point that Dennis Ross raised in his op-ed piece in the Washington Post the other day. He thought that the president ought to use the opportunity of the Palestinian president's visit to rhetorically call publicly for Arab nations, particularly Arab Gulf nations, who's done well with the price of oil being what it is the past year or so, that they redeem their pledges to the Palestinian Authority and begin investing real cash money in the West Bank and Gaza.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good idea, and I think that clearly they need to do more, and they haven't done enough, and there has been a lot of cash. I think the problem, though, is a little bit more complicated than that, because in some ways they feel that they have no control on what happens, because in a way they feel that they're channeling funds into projects that may be just absolutely destroyed the morning after because of a flare-up or conflict. They've seen what happened with some of it in Gaza and certainly Bethlehem, particularly those investors who came in and put money into projects they thought they were going to usher in a new era, and then they ended up in ultimately being destroyed. So I think you have people who are legitimately worried about how this money would be, whether it would make a difference, and that is dependent on political processes. But in the end, I do think they need to take risk. I think the Palestinian Authority needs support. I think that they need to show some results very quickly to their public to become more legitimate and to address the challenge that they're facing from Hamas. And I think the Arab governments can and should do more.
Mm-hmm. That construction sound we hear in the background, is it expanding your house or is that a small child?
No, unfortunately, it is a construction worker, and apparently they didn't get my signal to stop.
Okay, well, we'll have to abide with it. For members of the Palestinian Legislative Council, President Abbas's visit to Washington was significant. Joining us now is Ziad Abu Amr, a member of the Palestinian Legislative Council, an ally to President Abbas, and he's with us by phone from his office in Gaza. Very good of you to speak with us today.
Thank you.
President Bush, as you know, pledged $50 million to the Palestinian Authority to help housing and construction projects in the Gaza Strip following withdrawal. What's your response to that?
Well, this is good, and we do appreciate the commitment on the part of the president. And I think this is bound to improve the conditions on the ground and to empower the Palestinian Authority so it can proceed with its delivery system and the reconstruction of Gaza and the West Bank.
Aside from money, what do you think the United States can usefully do to move this process ahead?
I think the withdrawal from Gaza can provide an opportunity, but in order to do so, I think we need to have a clean situation in Gaza, a clean withdrawal, complete, so we don't have any reason for any future friction between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and the Palestinians should exercise control over the crossing point between Gaza and Egypt. And, of course, this can be done in a way where the security of Israel can be ensured. But also, on the other hand, Gaza alone is not enough. The withdrawal from Gaza has to be linked to a broader political vision. And the president himself provided that vision to end the occupation and to establish a Palestinian state to live side by side with Israel. And this has been also inscribed in the roadmap, which the international community has sanctioned and adopted.
Let me ask you also about some of the things that others have been calling on your side to do, particularly on the economy. $50 million is going to be, I guess, a shot in the arm in Gaza, but the Palestinian economy has to do much better. For one thing, if your party, Fatah, is to be able to hold off Hamas.
Well, I think what we are talking about is how to restore order and how to ensure the rule of law and stability and security in the Palestinian territories, in this case, Gaza first. I think this can be done. It can be done through political agreement within the boundaries of the law and within the boundaries of the Palestinian Authority. We have established a truce. It has been working. It's providing a context for a safe and peaceful Israeli withdrawal from Gaza. We definitely can build on that, and the money which has been pledged by the president will help. It will push the process forward. Mm-hmm. But of course, I think there is a lot more needed to salvage Gaza and to engage in an economic revival plan. So the international community and the Arab countries are invited to help the Palestinians implement a good economic recovery plan.
One more question before we let you go. President Abbas said today, time is our worst enemy. How much time do you have?
Well, I think we are racing with time, and the more we deliver on the ground, the more we make the people feel that there is improvement in their lives and that there are prospects, there is hope, the better. I think the sooner we do that, the better. And I agree, we have very little time, but this should give us the motivation to work hard and to exert the extra effort that is needed, not only by the Palestinians, but also by the Israelis, who should help, by the administration, by the European Union, and all countries which can help at this point.
Ziad Abu Amr, thank you very much for being with us today. Ziad Abu Amr is a member of the Palestinian Legislative Council, and he joined us by phone from his office in Gaza. With us now is Ambassador Ari Meckel, the Consul General of Israel in New York City. He's with us from studios at the consulate. Very good of you to join us today.
Thank you.
One of the most critical issues for Israel is disarmament of Palestinian militants. Did you see any progress on that from the talks today at the White House?
You know, we don't know what was said behind closed doors, but just judging by the statement, the public statement, I didn't really hear much of it. And this is really a critical point. As far as we are concerned, and most people don't realize it, we are not yet at the roadmap stage. We are at the pre-roadmap stage. And why? Because the first article of the roadmap says that the Palestinians need to dismantle the terrorist organizations, confiscate their weapons, etc., which they are clearly not doing. So therefore, we didn't even start the roadmap stage. And this was not mentioned at all in the statement of chairman. And by the way, the title should be chairman and you, I mean, I'm not saying it to you, he was referred to as a president, but the right title, according to the Oslo Accord, is Chairman Abbas.
Let me ask you, we heard from our reporter in Jerusalem, Linda Gradstein, earlier that some Israelis were taken aback a bit by President Bush's remarks that any adjustment to the internationally recognized borders of Israel had to be agreed by the two sides.
The last 3 days, both in New York and Washington, with Prime Minister Sharon, who was visiting here, and I can tell you that he feels that this administration is probably the best ever as far as its relationship with the State of Israel, and he's fully confident in the support of President Bush. And I don't think that this statement or that statement changes this very critical fact.
Even though President Bush had said earlier that he recognized changes on the ground, that the, particularly in the West Bank, that these areas, facts had changed?
Well, this is important to us. He did say that there's an agreement between Israel and the United States of America, which was expressed in the well-known president's letter of a year ago or so, and in which he does recognize the reality on the fact. We consider this very important, and we will certainly follow through on these promises.
Also wanted to ask you the same question that I put to Ziad Abu Amr about the window of opportunity, if you will. There have been eruptions of violence that have broken the lull. Are you afraid the time is running out?
Well, it's up to the Palestinians. Today, Mr. Abbas met with Jewish leaders in Washington just before he met with the president. And he said that they have achieved a 90% reduction in violence. And it's probably true, but although some of it was achieved by defense that we have built. But in any case, I don't think the time is running out. We are now busy with the disengagement from Gaza. This is for us now the central point. And we are waiting for actions by the Palestinians against the terrorists. We think that appeasing the terrorists, ceasefires, and so on is not going to solve the problem. As we speak, Hamas is getting stronger. Hamas is now busy manufacturing Qassam rockets and other weapons, and they are just waiting for the next opportunity. You see, to the terrorist, the ceasefire is the same as the one-minute recess to the professional boxer between rounds. They're just using the rest for the next round. Mr. Abbas has no choice. We know, and I think the Americans know, that with terrorists, either you destroy them or they will eventually destroy you. And he has to start acting. His statements are great. He's making a lot of very good statements. We are happy with the statements. We think that there's a good chance that he will change the situation. Unfortunately, statements are not enough. It's action that we all are looking for.
Ambassador Meckel, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, sir.
Ari Meckel is Consul General of Israel in New York, and he joined us from the consulate studios there in New York City. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let me bring Dennis Ross and Shibley Telhami back into the conversation. Shibley, the idea that we just heard from Ambassador Meckel, well, no, time is not running out.
Well, first let me actually say something about this idea that the notion that any final status has to depends on the agreement by both sides is somehow a concession to the Israelis. This is actually rather remarkable. I think Dennis has probably a long memory like I do, when in fact this was seen to be a compromise. To say it seemed to be saying it on behalf of Israel, because the Arab position had been essentially that Israel has to implement UN resolutions, and there is nothing to be negotiated about the boundaries. They were known. And the idea that Israel, which had control of the territories as it is, would have a say on where to withdraw from was something that was not accepted by the Arab states. So this evolution of the position is interesting, that now we think about it as if it's a concession away from Israel rather than a concession for Israel. It's a historical perspective. To me, it's really remarkable. Mm-hmm. I do think that time is running out. I think time is running out because of the changes on the ground. I think time is running out because I think people... have lost faith and trust. There isn't any now. I think they want an end to this conflict. They know that the only end to this conflict comes in a two-state solution. But frankly, the reality on the ground is changing. The definition of the conflict is changing. Religious groups are gaining. They want to define the conflict in a different way. And I think if this opportunity collapses, as it did in July 2000, it'll take far longer than the 5 years it has taken to even try to begin a negotiation after the collapse of the Camp David negotiations. I think there is a, I'm really worried about the period after the Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, which I expect will take place. But I think that there is such a large gap of expectations between the Israelis and the Palestinians that we're not addressing. The Israelis are expecting a temporary solution, maybe postponing final status. The Palestinians want an end to the conflict soon, and that's going to get us in a situation of conflict.
We'll get Dennis Ross's reactions after the break. I apologize. And we want to hear from you as well, of course, 800-989-8255. This is Talk of the Nation. Back after the break, I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and here are the headlines from some of the stories NPR News is following today. There are indications that Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the Jordanian who leads al-Qaeda in Iraq, has been wounded, perhaps mortally. There is still a possibility that this news is disinformation designed to confuse U.S. and Iraqi forces. And Democrats made another effort today to stop a vote on John Bolton's nomination to be the next ambassador to the United Nations. Republicans are pressing for a vote today on the nomination. You can hear more on those stories coming up later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow on this program, well, it's Science Friday, Ira Flatow will be here with a look at the possibility of a worldwide flu pandemic and the tools available to fight one. Right now, we're going to wrap up our conversation on the urgency of progress in the Middle East. Our guests are Dennis Ross, author of The Missing Peace, The Inside Story for the Fight for the Middle East Peace, and Shibli Telhami, who's a Anwar Sadat Professor for Peace and Development at the University of Maryland. Dennis Ross, just before the break, did you detect a sense of urgency in the comments that we heard earlier today?
Well, I think that there was probably not as much of a sense of urgency as I would like to see. You know, having been involved in this process for so long, the one thing I can tell you, one of the lessons I drew from all of it, is that every time you have a moment and you miss it, you're always worse off. We have a moment now because we do have a Palestinian leader who believes in secular government, who believes in the rule of law, who believes in nonviolence, and who believes in coexistence. But it's not clear that he's doing real well on the ground because he's not delivering a lot. You heard Ziad Abu Amr say, we need to be able to show our own people that we're delivering, and that's not happening right now. On the other side, you have the disengagement that the Israelis are carrying out, which is, in fact, an enormous historic step. And Sharon is facing great difficulties in Israel because of it. It will be a very emotional time. You see right now already there are different expectations on each side. The Palestinians are looking to be on the disengagement. The Israelis are looking for a kind of pause after the disengagement. That tells me, unless we, number one, do much more to help demonstrate, help Abu Mazen demonstrate that he is delivering, making life better, unless we can ensure that we manage the disengagement so it comes off and vindicates this as a step, unless we build a bridge to the future, which I think the roadmap could be, but today the roadmap is defined by each side completely differently. Every single obligation in the roadmap is understood completely differently by the two sides. So unless we act on those three levels, we're unlikely to be able to take advantage of the moment. And I think the key, you use the word, is urgency. I don't yet see it. I'm hoping that today's visit will somehow create a greater sense of urgency on all sides' parts, including ours.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Steve. Steve's with us from San Francisco.
Oh, hello. I was calling because part of the impetus for Israel to change might be the fact that we give them over $2 billion in aid every year, and there's been no mention of withholding that as any kind of leverage to make changes on the side of Israel right now.
Well, a considerable portion of that money is committed under treaty from the peace agreement with Egypt. But Shibli Telhami, are you hearing much from the administration on putting pressure on Israel here?
Oh, I doubt it. It's certainly not in this arena. I think that, for one thing, I think the Congress would continually support aid to Israel. I don't think the administration could touch this particular issue. I think they have a lot of other ways of using incentives and pressures to move the process forward. Sometimes just a presidential statement matters a lot. The president, when the president had announced his support for a Palestinian state in 2001, that has become conventional wisdom. That changes the position of the superpower, and with it, the expectations at home and abroad. The U.S. has a lot of incentives to get the parties engaged, but I doubt that this administration would come close to this aid issue, and certainly I think in Congress they would face great opposition if we were to do that.
Dennis Ross, the president, repeated today that Israel should dismantle illegal settlements and then stop expanding other settlements. Is this just rhetoric?
Well, I think it represents, again, a tone, and it means the administration is likely to do more. But, again, one of the keys in the Middle East is that if you're going to be serious about something, you don't talk about it just one time. You don't talk about it just in private. You make it clear that you'll keep talking about it in public. And it can't just be whenever you have a particular occasion to do so. And I think that's true for both sides, what they say about the Israelis, what they say about the Palestinians. One of the things the administration has to do is that they'll act between these moments when they have meetings. That's one of the things I think at this stage it has still been lacking.
Steve, thanks very much for the call. And gentlemen, before I let you go, I do want to ask, the window of opportunity, the lull, if you will, how long does the opportunity last? Shibli Talhami, is this something that is, obviously events, we can be overtaken by events at any time, but as far as you see, does the window extend till August and the Israeli withdrawal?
I think both sides have interest in cooperating through the Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, including Hamas, by the way. I think it has an interest because it wants to claim the Israeli withdrawal, as they're doing, because it was a unilateral withdrawal non-agreement. After that, I think we end real trouble if we don't move quickly politically. I think the expectations are high on the Palestinian side. They're not as high on the Israeli side as to where to go from there. And I think it's going to become urgent. I don't know what the administration is doing to prepare for that. It's like a wait-and-see attitude. I think that's enough. I think it has to be a plan to go beyond the Israeli withdrawal from Gaza.
Dennis Ross?
I agree generally with what Shibli said. I think the critical point right now is that there's a convergence of interests through the disengagement period, even though there is the capacity to see some unraveling unless there's more of an effort on the ground by General Ward on our side. But I also think that the expectations are so different for the period afterwards that unless you've done your work in advance and you show what's going to be happening, and by the way, it doesn't have to be some big initiative. You listen to Ziad Abu Amr talk about the roadmap, and I would take us back to, you want to build a bridge to the future, the roadmap has a utility for a very simple reason. Both sides, even though they mean different things by it, accept it as a political framework. So one way to make it clear that there already is a plan, there already is an effort, is for us to begin now to say, all right, we're going to work through and define every single obligation in the roadmap so it's understood the same way by both sides and begin to develop a timeline for it. You do that, I think it allows you to get beyond the post-disengagement period. If you don't do that, I'm afraid that we're in for real trouble. I don't think Hamas has any stake in the aftermath of the disengagement. One of the things, one last point, one very significant contribution that Abu Mazen has already made, he's changed the tone. He's changed the tone, he's been very clear against the violence, and that's had an impact on the psychology of the Palestinian public. Hamas at this point doesn't want to separate itself from the public. The public is not in favor of violence right now. So Hamas will bide its time. And by the way, it is rebuilding right now. It will bide its time. In the aftermath of the disengagement, it may say, look, we did that for Gaza, now we're going to do it for the West Bank. So I think the period after the disengagement will actually be extremely dangerous unless, in fact, we do our work in advance.
Dennis Ross, thanks very much. Dennis Ross, counselor at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, longtime Middle East peace negotiator. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Shibli Talhami, also thank you for your time today.
My pleasure.
Shibli Talhami, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, professor for peace and development at the University of Maryland, and he joined us by on the line from his house in Silver Spring, Maryland. I hope those repairs go well. When we come back from the break, the looting of the Iraq Museum and the lost legacy of ancient Mesopotamia.